in Southern California, back in the U.S. I'm Jim Rome, live in the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Third hour's wide open. So if you tried to get through before and you couldn't, now you can. 1-800-636-8686. Looking at the last 2 weeks, this email says, "Hey, Rome, I know you've been gone for 2 weeks and you're out of the country, so let me fill you in on everything that has happened while you were gone. Jay Cutler is now the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. That is the only thing that has happened in the sports world. Ignore Zeke being suspended for 6 games. Jay, I'm smoking heaters on the sideline. Freaking Cutler got a $10 million contract to play quarterback for somebody for 1 year. I just can't." Matt in Poland Springs, Maine. That really happened. That really is a thing. This email reads, "Romulus, checking in from Buffalo, where we're now looking forward to watching the lowly LA Rams unlock the two receivers that we've been unable to do anything at all with for the past 4 seasons. Not that I expected anything other than continued mediocrity in Watkins' fourth go-round here, but I also didn't expect the post-Rex Ryan era to start out with a wholesale sellout in week 2 of training camp. Meanwhile, Stephon Gilmore is getting fitted for his Super Bowl ring down in Boston. Hopefully, we can sneak past Jay Cutler's Dolphins at least once this season. Can't wait." That's what I'm saying, Bills Mafia. Didn't even wait for my take. Yeah, I want to ask you, how are you feeling about that? The season is over before it even starts. You can make 17-18 because that year is over. And the Jets are looking at them like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, hold up here." And the Bills are looking back at them and laughing, saying, "You think you know how to tank? You think you know what it means to go into the tank? This is how you tank a season." The question is it the right thing or the wrong thing? I want to get to that. One more thing coming off of hour number 2. Obviously, you clones really like that conversation with Cube. Really liked him comparing Nazis to herpes. No way, clones. No way did I expect you to enjoy that. At Tedrick Danson tweets, "Ice Cube comparing racist Nazis." It's kind of redundant, isn't it? Racist Nazis? As compared to what? Respectable Nazis? Dignified Nazis? "Ice Cube comparing racist Nazis to herpes is the most appropriate comparison there is." I like this guy better. Nitro tweets, "Well said, at Ice Cube." The Croth Rhodes tweets, "Holy crap. At Ice Cube brings Nazis are like herpes. Smack. That just made my day." Dan in C-Town tweets, "That was the best metaphor ever. Nazis are like herpes."
"It's not pretty. It's ugly. It's elusive. It hides. And it pops out, you know, like herpes or something. You know what I mean? It just pops out all out of nowhere."
Well, I know what you mean, Cube. I know what you mean. Kind of set that up. I mean, is that not what STDs do, right? They're nasty. They're ugly. They hide. They pop out at the worst possible time. You know, like, I don't know, herpes? You know what I mean? I'm going to take your word for it. I mean, I don't really know what you mean. Like, I know what you mean, but I don't really know what you mean. In the meantime, I'm looking for a good phone call. I'm looking for something to keep pace with what has been a very good radio program. All right, let me talk about Floyd and Connor for a minute. It's not that same old rehash. As an example, when that fight was first announced, I was not, and I didn't do it to go contrarian either, but I was not one of those people who said, you know, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Biggest cash grab ever. And no way in hell would I ever be a party to anything like that. I mean, of course it's a cash grab. And I said it when it was announced. But I said it was a cash grab and that I would be throwing down for it. Because I've got no problem giving Conor McGregor my money. That's what it comes down to. In fact, I can't wait to give Conor McGregor my money because this dude always gives me my money's worth. In fact, I don't care if it's the worst fight ever. I don't care if it's the biggest letdown ever, because that's possible. It might be. But McGregor has already given me my money's worth. This dude's already given me way more than the $100 that I might throw down for that fight, that I will throw down for that fight. I've already got my money's worth, and he has not thrown a single punch yet. So any punch that he actually lands in that fight is going to be a bonus and gravy. And in terms of him landing any meaningful punches, I'm not sure he will. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's never boxed professionally, and we're looking for him to hurt, much less beat, the best boxer of this generation. Maybe the best boxer ever. I mean, you want to talk about absurd. You want to talk about absurd. But then again, no more absurd than becoming one of the biggest things ever about 4 years after cashing welfare checks. No more absurd than him saying that he would put one of the greatest ever, Jose Aldo, to sleep with a single shot at the start of the fight when the guy had not lost in a decade, and then going out and doing just that. No more absurd than talking himself into a $100 million payday against a boxer. You see, that's the thing about McGregor. He says all sorts of crazy things, but then he goes out and he backs just about all of it up. And the more the guy talks, the more you start to maybe believe him, or at least listen to him. Like I said, he's kind of mesmerizing like that. It's almost hypnotic. Because I know for a fact, this guy cannot beat Floyd Mayweather in a boxing ring. He just can't. He can't do it. I don't care if Floyd's 40. I don't care if Floyd hasn't fought in 2 years. I don't care if Floyd took that fight on short notice. I don't care that Conor says he'll weigh 20 more pounds than Mayweather. 20 more pounds when they get into the ring. I don't care that he's the bigger man. I just know. I mean, like, I know McGregor can't win that fight. Yet, for some reason, the guy's still in the back of my head. And the more he talks, the more you wonder, like, damn, could he? Maybe? No way. But then you listen to what he says, and you listen to how he says it. And you know that while it's part show, this dude truly does believe it. Quote, he said, quote, "This is a fight that has been in my crosshairs since Floyd's been opening his mouth. Simple as that. I see a beaten man in his eyes, in his body language, in everything he does. I'm going to knock him out bad. He's too small. I know he's fast. I know he's got good reflexes. I know he's experienced. I don't care. I hit you, you fall, and that's it. He will be unconscious." End quote. I mean, this isn't a dude who's just spewing diarrhea out of his mouth to drive pay-per-views. The guy really does believe it. He really does. And then again, why wouldn't he? He went from being a plumber's apprentice. Not even a plumber. Nothing against plumbers. Believe me, I can't do that. I'm not smart enough to do that. But, I mean, from a plumber's apprentice to being the biggest thing in combat sports, and he did it almost overnight. And just about everything else that this guy has said or believed or willed that was just crazy has come true. I'm not saying he's going to win. I'm saying maybe it's just not the most ridiculous notion ever. I don't know. Maybe they do wear 8-ounce gloves. Maybe somehow, miraculously, McGregor catches Mayweather with that big left hand. And then maybe instead of it being one of the biggest disappointments and biggest letdowns ever, maybe it's the biggest upset ever. I don't know. I mean, again, logically, rationally, I'm going to say it for the record. He has no chance. There's no way he can win that fight. But God, the more I listen to Conor, the more I listen to him, the more I watch him, the more I hear what he says, the more I hear how he says it, the more I see how this guy literally has willed himself to this point. And done so like in less than 5 years. I don't know. Maybe. Where do you come out? Are you buying any of that? Do you think that he has any chance to land a big shot, much less win the fight? And I'm really curious about this. Given how polarizing both of these guys are and how many of you hate either one of them, who are you pulling for in this fight and why? Because they are two of the more polarizing dudes you'll ever see. Who do you like and why? And what do you think is going to happen? And do you feel any differently now about that fight than you did when it was first announced? Are you going to pay for it or are you not going to go anywhere near it? You know where to find me. Bryce Harper, Ducks season-ending injury. The Buffalo Bills send Sammy Watkins to the Rams. I also want to talk about that from a Rams standpoint. Do you like that trade? If you're a Rams fan, do you like that trade? You give up a second-round pick for a guy who's a free agent-to-be who has not been able to stay healthy. That's actually a big, big swing and a big risk for the Rams. Not like they have a bunch of draft picks stockpiled after the ones they gave up to make the Jared Goff deal at the top of the draft. I want to hit that, too. And Smackoff 23. If you're not beyond that and you want to hit that again, let me know. All right, we're coming right back. Telephone calls coming up next.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
It's been a very good show so far. First show back after 2 weeks, and I feel great, and staff's done a great job. We're all happy to be here. It's been a really, really good show. So would I jeopardize that? Would I do anything to risk that? And the answer is yes, because what I'm going to do is something that I normally don't do. I always do what's best for the program. And what's best for the program, unfortunately, or fortunately, is more of me and less of you. But with that in mind, I will now talk about your favorite topic, you. Let's go back to the Smackoff for a minute. And the reason I bring this up is this. We had Smackoff 23, and we had that lead up to the event, the biggest event on this show or really any other show in this genre. And we lead up to it for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and you think that nothing's going to live up to the hype, and then it does. And then I think it smashes it. I think we have the best event ever. But then I just blow out of town, and I'm gone for 2 weeks, and I don't reset it. The guest host, I thought, did an excellent job of resetting the Smackoff. They understood what it represented. They obviously were listening, and they knew. And I want to congratulate and acknowledge all the guys who hosted the show while I was off. I thought they did a great job and treated the Smackoff with the respect that it deserved. But I really haven't been here to talk about it. So it accomplishes two things. I talk about the thing you like best, you, and I address something that I hadn't really hit on. So let me talk about that for a minute. Smackoff 23. I haven't been here to talk about it, but I did tweet when it was over. And I said at that time that it was the greatest Smackoff yet. And now 2 weeks have gone by, and believe me, being out of the country and having some quality time with the family and getting out of the grind, I had a lot of time to think about that. And 2 weeks out, I'm going to stand by that statement. It was the best one we've had yet. There was so much at stake, and there were so many questions coming in. You know, like there is every single year. Questions like, what will Left do? Will Brad be able to rip back that crown? What will Left do? Will Mike finally be able to get over the hump? What will Left do? Who's going to pull the best cameo this year? What's Left going to do? And then finally, what the hell is Left going to do this time? Lots of questions, a ton of storylines, and some new faces. Jeff Passan. How would he deliver? Would he deliver? Six golden ticket winners. Which, if any of them, would make a name for themselves and make it back next year? So the Smackoff has grown every single year. It's become kind of a beast, and the bar gets raised every single year, and this year was no exception, and I love it, and obviously you did too. The Smackoff trended for the entire day, even hours after we went off the air. It's pretty amazing. It even spawned yet another Sports Illustrated write-up, an epic SI write-up. So let's go ahead and take a look back at some of the best moments that made Smackoff 23 the best to date. Best line, always tough to call. But the best line may go to the guy who ends up ripping second place once again. See, the thing is, Mike and Indy gets a lot of heat for being the so-called jungle's bridesmaid. You know, never the bride. But it's not a good take. In fact, it's a bad take. Yes, he racked up his sixth second place finish. But do you know how pure your game has to be to finish second six times in this event? And I mean that. I'm not being facetious. You know how good you have to be to come in second six times? And think about the last two. It took bum rushing the studio and then bum rushing the studio again with some legendary clones to beat this guy. Those were the only calls better than Mike and Indy's straight smack. Now, I get it. Nobody remembers second place, but I will, especially when Mike's call delivered what might have been the best line or lines of the day, all of them being about being inside of Vic's head.
I smacked Vic so hard a couple weeks back, he got put in the concussion protocol. Then I protocoled left the week after that. And you better get the smelling salts out again, Romy, because I'm not finished. The doctors on the Smack-Off CTE committee identified three guys who were deemed to be most at risk because I've protocoled them so many times. The first case identified was Vic. The committee observed that Vic tended to be a regular in all the places you don't want to be a regular. The check cashing store, the neighborhood whorehouse, fifth place in the Smack-Off. So they ordered a scan of Vic's brain, and in his brain scan, they saw an image of me waving at the camera. I've been in Vic's head so long, the state of California tried to charge me property taxes.
I tweeted the day of the Smack-Off that this was the toughest Smack-Off to decide a winner so far, and it's true. Mike ran another winning race. That call was good enough to win. So now the Don of the Midwest Mafia has got to come back stronger and better, and he does every single year. You can come see about him. He'll come even harder in the paint, because you all can't. So he had some of the finest lines, without question. The holy bleep moment of the event goes to Brad and Corona. This dude was cruising. Mid-call, we were thinking that this guy might do the impossible for a second time. Go wire to wire and rip the crown. But then Brad went full Brad and did the unexpected. He fell on the freaking sword. Complete kamikaze. The first Smack-Off suicide.
So out of respect for the Smack-Off and my fellow competitors, Chael, Mike, Vic, Steve, Cam. Is there a Cam? I don't know. All the other lames whose names I can't remember. I will now do the honorable thing by committing Smack-Off suicide, also known as Smack-Off Harakiri or Seppuku, which will bring honor to this competition and allow someone else besides me for a change to win the $5,000 this year. Going to end my call with a joke that I've written myself. I hope you like it. And Alvy, get ready to send me to meet my maker. Okay, so Najee Davenport, Peppermint Patty, and an uncircumcised Euro walk into a laundromat. Patty turns to Najee and says, "Hey, does it stink in here to you?" The Euro says, "No, those are just my turtlenecks."
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Incredible.
Not a very good call.
Insane. Unprecedented. The biggest question of the day may not have been how Lef dug up Terrence and Sierra Madre, but rather why Brad torpedoed a call that was good enough to win the whole thing. He said he had a scheduling conflict, which I'm sure was true, but then again with Brad, who really knows? Maybe he's pulling the long con. Maybe he's setting something up for next year. All I know is we were left to scrape our jaws up off the floor after that all went down. Godspeed, Brad. I look forward to whatever it is you have next. A holy bleep moment for any Smack-Off, much less that one. How about best newcomer? This year we had more golden ticket winners than any year prior. We had six, but the only one that really stood out was the one that we had the most questions about, Benny and Wisco. Coming into this, the question was, the biggest question, does this guy have anything else to offer besides rat and cheese references? And the answer is yes and no. He's like that great band that was performing live. You know, he's able to mix in some of his new stuff while at the same time playing all the hits.
Vic, I think I'm going to gloss you the Daisuke Matsuzaka of the jungle with that awkward delivery, the disappointing results and content that was much better at home before it made it to the show. But Jimmos, without individual walk-up songs this year, I really applaud you for playing Screaming Waistband at the top as a collective introduction to this group of lard-assed woolly mammoths. But thank you for the rodent ticket, allowing me to be part of this momentous occasion. The rind includes Friday, baby. Trap on your seatbelts, everybody. This is about to get radical.
Radical, bro. Radical performance from America's Dairyland. Or Benny in Swisco. It was great. How about Jeff Passan? Now, I thought about lumping him in with the newcomers, but that's not really fair. Yes, it was his first smack off. He was not, though, a golden ticket winner. Nor was he on their level. He was on a level all his own. Jeff was something of a hybrid. He repped both the old and new school callers, and honestly, he killed it on his maiden voyage.
You know why I'm here, Jim? Because I'm a clone. Because I have takes that don't suck. Because I think tandem calls are lame cop-outs. Because when I think of jungle couples, I think of John and Trapper, not Brad and Corona and his meth dealer. Because when I hear the word war, I don't think of a location that comes before it. I think of what comes after it. Like war Toby and Houston, the Carmen San Diego of cranks. A war smack off Harmony. And definitely war team the others, reminding us all adolescence and puberty is hard. I don't know if I'm going to win the smack off clones, but if I do, Jim, I know one thing. The final score is going to be 27-27. I'm out.
How about that? This guy was less than 3 days out from the MLB trading deadline. Arguably the busiest day for any reporter, especially for him. And yet he's out there. I mean, you'd think this guy's head would be someplace else. He wouldn't be focused, but you'd be wrong. He was on point. He was sharp. No gimmicks, no stunts. Straight up smack. And he brought it, and he walked away with a third place finish. Could not be any more proud of Jeff Passan. Not surprised, but proud. You never know that first time out. And then, of course, you got the best call. You got the champ, the reigning champ, the first back-to-back smack-off winner in a decade, left in Laguna. Again, the question coming in was, what was he going to do? And then after that, the only question left was, how the hell did he do that? He dug into the SI archives to recreate a picture, really an event, that took place more than two decades ago, and he brought along one of SI's best writers, Ben Golver. To recap it all, the article dropped while I was in the basement, and it was pretty awesome. And then, of course, you had the Terrence cameo. Tons of people would ask me over the years, whatever happened to Terrence? Whatever happened to Terrence? Why doesn't this guy call anymore? And honestly, I really never answered the question. I wouldn't answer it because I assumed the worst. I think we all literally assumed the worst, that he had passed away. So when Lef not only pulled him onto his call, but then pulled him into the studio, it was literally like seeing a ghost.
Jim, being a star actor in the jungle just means you're a failed smack runner. Per Vialvi, O.J. killed her. Studio Stormy.
Hey, don't go pissing your pants, kid. What the hell happened? You lose your place in a damn script? In my day, we didn't even use scripts.
Well, but aren't you...
Terrence and Sarah Madry. Yeah. So what?
But I thought you were...
Dead? No, legends never die, kid, unless you're Bert Corona. You killed that guy last year. Hey, this is your big chance. You know what an honor it is to be in the pole position and go back-to-back? Unless you're that cow-tipping redneck Mike and Indy or his lackey Shale. Hey, if he fought Mayweather under MMA rules, he'd still get his ass kicked. That guy's going to end up wrestling bears at the carnival. Okay? Hey, listen, kid. I got your back. You know that 1996 Sports Illustrated picture of all those clones with Jim? They all got your back too, kid. You can count on it.
The 1996 SI photo shoot, I mean, do you mean to tell me that Joe and Lemon Grove, Dave the Mayor and Poway, Rich and Anaheim Hills, Silk, Ira, Trapper, and Jim Benton, the Detolas, and Raider Mike all have my back? But I thought they were dead too.
I told you, kid, legends never die. Besides, they're not dead. They're just dead from the neck up. They can still walk around and pose for a picture now and then. Come on, now.
Well, Jim, I think that's them walking into the studio right now.
And it was. It's pretty amazing. I mean, I literally thought Terrence was dead. I thought he was dead, and there's Terrence right before my eyes. Understand, Terrence is an icon and a legend of this show, but I don't think I've seen Terrence more than three times in my entire life. And I certainly thought I would never see him again, and there he was. An incredible moment. I mean, I don't know what Lef had to do to not only get a hold of Terrence, but then to convince him to be a part of this. But then again, I really don't need to know or want to know. It just goes down in jungle history as one of the wildest moments ever. The full list: Ira, Rich in Anaheim Hills, Trapper, Silk, Joe in Lemon Grove, the CEO, the coach, freaking Kerwin from Riverside made it in. Jim Benton, the original webmaster, Terrence and Sierra Madre, and of course, Randall dressed as Raider Mike. And special thanks to Rich Flores. And not only that, it wasn't just the callers of the past that left Doug up. Dude was digging up a couple of all-time greats. You know, like my great-great-grandparents. Or short of that. He even brought back freaking Hacksaw.
And, Romy, as you can see, I'm keeping it totally old school today. I've dropped all the gimmicks. Whitey, hit it. Hacksaw, that's your cue. 3, 2, 1.
That's right, Lef. I'm Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, and I want to talk Chargers soccer with you. Urine bombs, flare guns. I want to hear from you. Parent tunnels, bleacher fires. Looking at you, soccer mom. Show me your lightning bolts. Corner kick me a phone call.
Thanks, Smacksaw. Hey, I'm Freddy. How's that for old school, huh?
And never mind how he talked Terrence into it. How did he talk the knife into it? Smacksaw. Now, look, I agree with Mike and Indy when he said it's still called the smack off, not the heartwarming moment off. But where Mike and Indy set out an amber alert for the smack in Lef's call, there was some there. It was there. You may have just lost it while getting caught up, waiting to hear what he was going to do, but there was actual smack.
Hey, Romy, last night, did you see a helmet chipped the tooth of Aaron Judge? How in the hell did a helmet even find a tooth in this guy's gap mouth? I mean, dude's got so many gaps in his teeth. Whenever Joe Girardi comes to put the shift on, I'm pretty sure he's motioning for Aaron's chiclets to move over. And with that jack-o'-lantern mouth, people in New York have already started calling him Mr. October 31st. I know his name is Aaron Judge, but are we sure he wasn't created by Mike Judge? I mean, dude looks so much like Butthead. I have to expect his pressers to sound like, I'd like to swing big wood. That was cool. If Aaron Judge can bring the teeth, Mark and Hollywood can sure supply the gums.
Anyway, what's poppin', Twitter? Yeah, like, trust me, nobody knows that you can't win off gimmicks alone more than Lef. Remember, he nearly clipped my tower with a helicopter and only finished fifth. So he's sharpened up his takes and smack over the past few years, and he's delivered strong 2 years running now. At the end of the day, what was the thing that you remembered most? It was Lef. For his smack, for his gimmicks, for unearthing Terrence. It was an incredible call to top what was the best smack-off of all time. What do you do next year? I'm already sweating that. What are we going to do next year? And you wonder about Lef. Does he have it in him to run it back again? Could this guy go back to back to back? What do you do? I don't know what he does, but I guarantee this guy's already thinking about it right now. Unless he's thinking, I'm going to walk off on that. There you go. Clones, your favorite topic. You. We'll come back with one last segment. Got to get out right now. I don't want to get in trouble with the suits my first day back. That would not be a good look. Time now for a sports update. ATP, Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Remember, you want to get your battery tested for free and find out whether or not it needs to be replaced by the professional parts people who will help you find the battery that you need most. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Kid Stupendous, Josh in Denver asks, Jim, I was wondering if there is an Ask the Pros today. Thanks. Good question, Josh. There is every single Monday. Not really sure how that one got through. Rich in the 970, Jim O's, what was the most delicious meal you ate while in Italy? And it's kind of funny. They kind of run together. There was one night that we went to a restaurant in Capri. We stayed in Capri. So we stayed in Capri and we had like a day trip to the Amalfi Coast. But we stayed in Capri, which is an island, and we had this unbelievable meal. It was under a lemon tree. Like, the whole restaurant was under these lemon trees. It was really wild. And we're sitting there one night, and we're hanging out, and the food's really good. And Janet's got this unbelievable radar for celebrities of any kind. And she says to me, she comes back from the bathroom and says, the coach, and she's not always on the sports figures, right? Quote, the coach from Miami is here. So I'm kind of racking my mind immediately. You know, I've probably got one or two adult beverages in me. The coach from Miami, who, like, Don Shula? Jimmy Johnson? I'm like, who? And I'm throwing these names out, and she's like, no, not that guy, not that guy. Look, over there. I'm like, first of all, don't be so obvious. You know, if we're in the same restaurant, that's not too good. if I'm craning my neck? She's like, yeah, you wouldn't even know it's him. Like, he's got a beard. He's undercover. You wouldn't even know. You know, the coach from Miami. Miami. And I'm running down every Miami coach. And she says, no, no, the basketball team. I'm like, the coach from Miami? The basketball team? And I'm not trying to think of the coach of the Miami Heat. I'm trying to, like, figure out who Janet thinks is the coach of a Miami team. I'm trying to outguess her. And she's like, no, no, you know, Pat. I'm like, Pat Riley? She's like, yeah, that's it. Look, it's him.
Get a grip.
So I look around there, and it's kind of funny because I did a throwback picture of Riley recently. And sure enough, I think I'm almost positive. Under the lemon tree, late at night in Capri, I can't be certain, but he was entertaining and he was loose. And I don't know, Rouse, you tell me, were you in Capri a couple weeks back? Because I think it was. Not rocking that All-Star Cafe polo that he was in that throwback picture with me. But Pat Riley. But anyway, the answer to the question is the best meal was under that lemon tree in that restaurant, which escapes me. The best meal, and we then went to the south of France. French Riviera, I know, must be nice. Clones, it kind of was. It was cool. But the best meal we had was if you go to my Instagram feed and you see that picture of that dude going down the street and flipping over that pole in the street right by the restaurant, that was the best meal there. Logan and I shared a Wagyu. I don't know, but after 2 weeks outside the country, by the time we hit LAX, I'm like, damn, where's an In-N-Out? Get me to an In-N-Out now. Or a hamburger or something. Dan in Denver is in. Rome, I hope you had a great vacation. When you are on vacation, do you ever get gifts sent to your room? Thanks. Kind of gifts? Like eggs? I get breakfast, you mean like that kind of gift? Dan, did you send me something, Dan? No, I never get gifts sent to my room. There is your Ask the Pros. Man, it's too bad I spent so much time on that because I want to talk about Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas. You know, all that talk leading up to the start of the PGA Championship was all about Jordan Spieth going for the career Grand Slam. Rory McIlroy returning to the course that he torched back in 2010. Except Rory didn't crack 72 in the first three rounds. Jordan never got below 70 in any of the four rounds. They finished tied for 22nd and 28th, respectively. Much as everyone would like to point out that Jordan and Justin are friends, and they are, this tournament simply was not about Jordan. It was all about Justin. And on any other Monday, this is a big story. This would never be a story that I saved until the end of the third hour. We're talking about the eighth first-time winner in the last nine majors. But don't get it twisted. Justin Thomas winning the PGA Championship is not a fluke. It was always a matter of when, not if, that he was going to get a major. He's got that kind of game. He has that kind of attitude. Now, the PGA Championship can throw up some pretty unusual winners every now and then. So with all due respect, and you know when somebody starts a sentence with all due respect, somebody is about to get disrespected. But with all due respect, Justin Thomas is no Rich Beam or Sean McKeel. That was clear when he dropped that 59 in Hawaii back in January, and when he came on the show shortly thereafter, and when he called his shot with no laying up back in April and declared that he was going to win a major this year. He just wasn't sure which one or how many. This guy's got game, and he's got it. I'm still not sure what it is, but you know it when you see it, and this guy's got a ton of it. And in the last major of the year, that game and that attitude showed up big time. The son and grandson of PGA professionals winning the PGA Championship gave everybody a great story and a tremendous show. He did what none of the other contenders could do yesterday. He came up big when it mattered most. And for a period of time, there was just total carnage. A five-way tie, each guy getting out of the way of the others until Thomas grabbed it by the throat and he wrestled it to the ground. When everybody else was panicking on the green mile, this dude's game was as smooth as that peanut butter choice he made on this show back in January. Peanut butter. Are you team crunchy or team creamy? You've addressed this.
Creamy.
How come?
I just don't understand how one can enjoy crunchy peanut butter. I don't know. I guess everyone's different, but I'm definitely on Team Creamy.
Yeah, just as you don't get crunch at all, like it makes no sense to you, I don't get creamy at all. I don't know why anybody would eat any peanut butter that didn't have a crunch.
Man, I wish we would have discussed this before the call. I don't know if I maybe would have committed to this. big step for us.
That's funny. He was not backing down from his choice, no matter how wrong that choice was. And he did not back down from the moment yesterday. And that moment was so right. Then jarring a huge putt on 9, the chip in on 13, and then the brass putt on 17.
Strokes this putt out to the right, down to the left, just on the edge of the hole, and it goes in! Justin Thomas forcing the issue, gets it to 9 under par. One hole remaining in this 99th PGA Championship. He throws the ball up, emphatically grabs it with his left hand. He knows this tournament's his to win or lose.
Thanks to Westwood One. Yeah, sure, there may have been some magic on 10, where his tee shot hit a tree and came right back on the fairway, or where his 8-foot putt sat on the edge about an hour before dropping in. But that's not a lucky win. Not only is he a PGA champion, but as of right now, he is the player of the year. 4 wins, a major, a 59 in Hawaii, a 63 in the third round at the U.S. Open. That was his first major, but it says here it's not going to be his last. No chance. Now, I'd love to invoke jungle karma here, but while it's clear that a lot of guys need it, this is one dude who obviously did not. He's got it. A boatload of it. But it was clear he was going to win yesterday with or without it. He did not need it. That was incredible. And there's a lot more where that came from. That's not going to be his only one. Now, you can't say that about a lot of guys, but there's no doubt he's going to get more. It's not a question of if he gets another one, but how many more. Called a shot. He said this year he would get one. He just didn't know which one it would be or how many it would be. And there it is. So big, big ups to Justin Thomas. That's it, clones. We did it. I'm back. It's great to be back. We made it out of here. Josh in Detroit. Sorry, bro. I did not get your telephone call. I just ran out of time. There's always tomorrow. Or Wednesday. Or Thursday. Or Friday. Or next week. Or next month. Or next year. Or next decade.
Oh,
Josh, you have my word. I'll get you in here. You know, just like it's not a question of if he gets another major, but how many. There's no question I'll get you on the air, Josh. It's just a question of when. I can't answer that. Big, big day. David Quesenberry came in. You definitely want to hear that if you haven't heard that already. Steve Smith Sr. coming up big. Cube also was here. Check out our daily jungle, our daily podcast, if you missed any of that. My thanks to the XR4TI. Clones, thank you for listening. Have yourselves an awesome day, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow.